Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, Why Can't We Have Prince Edition? This is David Lee.
It's Mac Antigua.
So excited to have you all here with us. And today we have a guest. So in addition to all this new gear, we're apparently now on Apple Podcasts, which is very exciting.
We're figuring this podcasting thing out.
We have a logo.
This is the right time to get into podcasts, by the way.
Right. Everybody has one.
Everybody has one. This is the best time to buy.
But as we learned yesterday in a conversation with somebody, there's no podcast that has a general purview on the arts and culture sector such as ours, and particularly with the focus in Milwaukee. So that is our unique brand proposition.
And no other podcasts use the word purview or brand proposition as well.
One of the things that we love doing in this podcast is actually sharing with all of you what it's sort of like in the Imagine MKE office. And so during this week, we had this conversation about what would happen if the NBA All-Star Game came to Milwaukee, came to the Fiserv Forum at our new basketball forum.
Because half the staff really loves NBA basketball.
Right.
The other half couldn't care less, but the half of us.
Well, I think the other half cared about the cultural production.
Yes, that's right. That's why we're talking about it.
That's why we're talking about it, right? Like we had this... I'll turn it over to Mac, actually, who's from Chicago, to sort of share a little bit about like his feelings about how emotional you got, right?
I had mad feelings. I grew up a huge basketball fan. I played basketball growing up. I grew up during the Michael Jordan Bulls, right? So my adolescence was six titles. The dynasty is all I really knew, right? So to watch 3 days of a beautiful media narrative about how Chicago is the home of basketball in this country, and to see folks like... not just basketball players like Isaiah Thomas, Mark Aguirre, Anthony Davis referenced, right, past, present, and future. You also had Buddy Guy, Barack Obama, Chance the Rapper. You know it's deep when Kanye West is barely mentioned. They just put the camera on him. So to me, I cried often to see the city that I grew up in really just being affirmed in terms of culture. So that's, for me, that's what I was like to watch the All-Star game.
And so that brought for us, the staff here at Imagine MKE, a question about what would happen if the NBA All-Star game was down the street from our office.
And we're not the only ones talking about it.
Right.
Oh yeah. All right. Cause I'm staring at her the whole time. I'm like, we're not going to talk about it. Are we?
Our first guest is Miss K-Town, Kanita Hickman, who runs our artist support and
K-Town?
Outreach.
That night.
Thank you. Can't leave me hanging.
I just want to add that in an email that Ian Abstin introduced me as the queen of Imagine MKE.
Oh.
So I don't know if you'd like to add that to the intro, but that's in writing.
That is bold to have your first words on mic. Yeah. Declare yourself the queen of something.
I didn't do that. It sounds better when other people do it. I didn't do that.
I think Aretha Franklin had to release like a whole net product of albums before... anybody even called her the Queen of Soul, much less she called herself the Queen of Soul.
In response, I did tell him that was really overreaching, but that I appreciate.
Wow, I'm glad you acknowledged it was overreaching, yet you brought it up as the first thing you talked about.
So, you know, this question really, I think, dovetails with a moment a couple of weeks ago, actually probably a couple months ago, where I stormed into the office like Kramer, like I often do, given that we have sort of a shared office space and I'm in a different space.
Love that 90s reference, by the way.
I can't unsee it now.
So current.
David
so current.
Kramer.
Anyways, I popped in the office and I was like, why don't we have our own Prince? Why doesn't Milwaukee have Prince? Right. Chicago has an incredible, as Mac outlined, cultural and artistic scene, a deep history with the blues. Detroit has an incredible music scene, boasts Eminem, Motown, and yet this city that we live in, which is close in proximity on the Great Lakes, does not have, we have great folks, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but we don't have that level of icon, right? Mm-hmm. And so why is that? So that's part of the conversation today.
Right on. And so to play around with it, and Kanita, you know, obviously you're a member of the team. Could you just share a little bit about, just a little backstory about sort of, I think, with regards to the performing arts and your own experience with that industry, could you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what you bring into the table, a little bit to the table, so to give context for the listener, not just because you're an awesome teammate, but also
thank you,
the field.
Yeah, so I started off actually as a freelance writer, so writing for different music publications, and Milwaukee small streets talk. So when folks found out there was a freelance writer who was writing for national publications, I started to get to know the independent rapper community really well because I was doing bios for free so that I could resubmit it to my editor and get them in the publication. From there, I moved into artist management, PR, again, specifically for independent musicians, primarily hip-hop artists here in Milwaukee, interned and worked in radio for a little bit. That's kind of the history. And then started my brand strategy company for independent artists.
But you've also worked for statewide music organizations as well.
Yeah, right? So I was vice president for WAMI, so I started off as their membership chair.
WAMI is Wisconsin.
WAMI, Wisconsin area music industry. Right. So about 40-year-old music, statewide music organization, and they do an award show every year, alternating between like Turner Hall here and Fox City's Performing Arts Center. And really it's a celebration of Wisconsin artists. We have a Wisconsin Hall of Fame. Great org. Yeah.
So these are all the things you're bringing in. Again, as David talked about, the overall, this notion of there's, what is it about Milwaukee that if the All-Star game came to Milwaukee, which it should someday, what, who would we put up to offer? And I know we're kind of bringing a heavy music spin, but this, we're going to extend this all. So before we even get to the deeper conversation, let's play the game, shall we? So let's say Milwaukee hosts the All-Star game. Let's say it was tomorrow. And let's say there's three elements we got to book here. We got the dunk contest, which usually involves either players of NBA connections to Milwaukee and or just celebrities in general, right, that are connected. We would need to have that. So I'm just curious, what Milwaukee people would you cast, you know, in the dunk contest? So, David, who do you got? Who's one person you'd put on that panel?
The top person for me, I mean, I think it's, you have to have Kareem. Right?
Right.
100%. He might be the, he probably.
Lou Alcindor. You'd announce him as Lou Alcindor.
Also known as, right?
Right, right. But that, because that's referencing that, yeah, his name back then, right? Like, and then came over to Kareem.
So. Yeah, I think he might actually have to take the Dwayne Wade position, like the elder statesman on the dunk contest panel.
Okay.
That's probably my number one draft pick. You got to have Kareem.
All right. So what do you got, K-Town? Who else is on that panel? And again, so you have a music person, you could have an artist, an actor, because again, Chadwick Boseman was on the Chicago All-Star. Who do you got?
I have a list of people.
Right, but who's the one you'd take?
So I don't know her name, but female, because I was
That's
just
a great
thinking
start.
Of her. Thank you.
Okay.
Female basketball player from Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
I forget where she went to college, but when she was in the finals, she hit like two like buzzer shots in like the last two games, and they won, I believe, the title. And then I remember seeing her on Ellen, and Kobe was one of her favorite players.
Oh, so yeah, I know what you're talking about. Is it Shiny Igwebike or something? Or Shiny? She plays now at WNBA, but in college, she hit for Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. She had a bunch of.
But she's from Milwaukee.
That's awesome. Yeah, yes.
And so to me, she's filling that Candace Parker spot.
That's right.
Yep.
That's good stuff.
Yep.
Milwaukee's got a great basketball tradition. But what about now? Who's the Chadwick Boseman actor and or musician you're putting on there?
Who do you got, Mac?
No, you know, this would be such a reach, but I'm a big Community fan from NBC's Community. Dan Harmon, the writer, creator of Community and Rick and Morty. I don't know if you see the NBA crossover audience. I would love to see it. Because that's such a, like, what? But I think in terms of cultural influence right now, those are two shows that have, at least comedy-wise, have actually been cult favorites, and Milwaukee's a cult town, so I think I would put Dan Harmon on there.
Right.
And he actually watches basketball, so I think he would
do it? You think he'd do it? You give him a buzz?
Right. What's one more? Because there's only four. Who do you got? Who's going to round it out?
Because I've got to give you two names.
Keep in mind, there's two more things we got to book, so don't burn like the.
But
big
we could,
ones.
But we could like move people around.
Can this person sing? If they can't sing, then you can say yes.
Yeah, tell us who can't sing because we got to book singing acts.
Can we do the Fonz?
Yeah, and Henry Winkler.
Yeah,
Henry Winkler.
Can we put the Fonz on there? I mean, he's not from Milwaukee.
That's
a good point. But, Thomas Boyette. Well, that's a good, Thomas Miller.
That's a good point, though. That's a good point.
You got that.
Yeah, we do have the bronze Fonz.
Like, we got the bronze Fonz.
We have the bronze Fonz. That's a good, I don't know. That's a good point, though. That's a real pull, though. That'd be
or
a real
could you do
pull.
D Wade? He went to Marquette.
Wow, that's a reach. But he loves Chicago. He loves Chicago. Like he just
he's did.
He's
from Chicago. He's okay. He grew up there. I'll take him off my list.
Went to Richards High School.
I'll take him off my list.
South suburban Chicago.
I have to throw in there that as a kid growing up in San Francisco, I have a soft spot in my heart for Latrell.
Latrell Sprewell.
Sprewell. Spree.
So why would he be on the why would he put him on this?
He's from Milwaukee.
Oh, he is from Milwaukee.
He's from Milwaukee, yeah.
Spree.
Yeah. Lives in Shorewood or Northside somewhere.
And I believe they had
that. Or like River Hills. Like River Hills or something.
His family used to have a mechanic shop that's actually kitty corner from the block.
Spree.
His yacht is called Milwaukee's Best.
That would be
not his yacht anymore.
That would be an awesome sort of NBA like
rehabilitation.
Not like a reconnection reunion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be great. All right. Two more things before we get into the real talk. Who's doing the national anthem?
All right.
So K-Town's ready.
I've got two people that I would suggest.
You can't take two. Give Tim. We'll come back to you.
No. They're guitarists.
Okay.
So it would either be Daryl Sturmer, who is also a Whammy Hall of Famer.
Okay.
Or Sean Hinton, who is Mary J. Blige's guitarist, actually.
Wait, tell us a little about Daryl Sturmer.
Guitarist for Phil Collins and Genesis. From Wisconsin.
That's all.
Yeah, that's all.
Guitarist for Phil Collins and Genesis. Nice.
So, I would say him on the anthem or Sean Hinton, born and raised in Milwaukee, went to School of the Arts. Like I said, he's Mary J. Blige's guitarist, but he's played for a lot of other A-listers as well.
All right.
Now he's building his solo career, and he's done the anthem for Bucks games with his guitar.
So he already knows the terrain.
Yep.
He knows the vibe. He knows the sound, acoustics. Yep. Those are solid choices. Well learned. What do you got, David?
I'm probably going with Naima Adedapo from American Idol. When the American Idol.
So you're going the American Idol route.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, who's the other one, right?
Danny Goki. Goki.
Goki.
Probably not the NBA demographic.
But Naima's mom is also a very accomplished jazz singer as well. So do you both?
I could do duet.
Ooh. Or do you just do
You
Naima?
Can do duet.
Duet.
And she also teaches in MPS school. She may be retired now, but I know for a while she taught the mom.
That's a great story, too.
Yeah. That's a great story. I love it. That's what this pod's about.
Who you got, Mac?
Oh, jeez. I'm going to show my age of being 44 years old, and I'm going Gordon Gano of the Violent Femmes.
That's probably right.
Get the Femmes out there.
Yeah.
One more time. And then maybe they break into like American music or something towards the end.
That also feels like maybe halftime show, right? But that's the next bit.
That's the next bit. This is the last thing is who's doing the halftime show? Who do you got doing the halftime set? Imagine this is probably have to be 5-song set. So they need to have a list or willing to bring on other artists that they could duo with. So what do you got?
I think I'm going NFL Super Bowl halftime show with the Femmes, with Lex Allen, with Gold, and with Reyna.
And you know TNT would never let that happen.
No, I know, but it'd be incredible.
Okay, that's the one you'd want.
I'm paying money to go see that.
That's
show.
The one you want, and that's a little like past and present, future.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
maybe a medley. How about a medley?
Okay, it's logistically difficult, but that's fine.
Come on, this is my dream halftime show.
Kenita, I'm more interested in your choice because I was already bored.
I don't know if you're really going to be interested in this. So in my mind, I'm like, how do you position this as a halftime show, right? Do we use this as an opportunity to show off our rich music history in the same way that Chicago did it?
Yeah.
Or do we use this as an opportunity to just like go completely rogue and just do like a history of hip hop in Milwaukee?
Okay.
Right? So.
Okay.
I mean, I like the medley idea. I like Sister Strings on
Thank
the stage.
Thank you, K-Town.
Yes, welcome. Sister Strings.
You're welcome, David Kamali. And so I think you have to have Sister Strings on stage, period.
Throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, because it makes it more palatable.
Yep.
They will make a hip-hop set more palatable. You have to have Ray Nitty, and he has to perform
Bow. Gotta have Ray. Big play, Ray.
Bow was freaking huge. It was a national song. You gotta have Bow. It has a dance to go to it. I'll show you that dance later on YouTube.
Not you personally, right?
Not you personally. All of you.
The royal you.
We'll do it together in the
office. The royal you. All of our listeners.
I think you have to have Cuckoo Cal.
Cuckoo Cal.
He's one of our hip hop artists who actually was signed to, I believe, Tommy Boy Records.
Yes.
I remember watching his video on Rap City. So I think you have to have him. I think you need MT Twins.
Okay, there's a little future.
Yep.
That's a little taste of now and the future.
But I kind of like mixing it up with the Violent Femmes as well.
Oh, like a mashup kind of thing. Like a little
I
bit
think
of like
that
a,
could be dope. Like what Aerosmith and Run DMC tried to do at the Grammys.
Walk this way.
Tragic.
I'll walk this way.
It was like,
for the
oh, they're all old. And I think you have to have like an Ishtar or Webster X in the conversation. And that pains me to say because I did not say, other than Sister Strings, there are no other folks who identify as women in that set.
Right.
And that
would be nice.
That was tough for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. That's also a dope halftime show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great halftime show.
That'd
I don't
be
think
a little
I can
bit
think-
more. Thematically coherent than mine.
Yeah, I like hers better. I don't have one.
What?
I don't have a show because you guys took all the good ideas, and it comes back to the question that all right, I won't be a jerk. I would have Andy Hurley of the Fall Out Boy drumming, and then you'd have Jane Wiedlin bass as of the Go Go's. I'd have a Milwaukee supergroup.
Really?
That's right.
And then I would have we bring out Sturmer. We'll have two bassists. And then Danny Gokey on lead. And maybe throw in Dustin Diamond. Maybe Screech. No. Maybe a Screech.
Screech comes down from Washington.
Listen, I don't want to yuck your yum, but Dustin Diamond? Like, dude is wild.
That just reveals how I didn't take this question that seriously. So there you go, folks. That's and again, that sort of reveals a little bit of why we're interested in this. Why we couldn't have Prince play. I lived in Minnesota. I could rattle off a bunch of Minnesota bands right now. Let's go. Husker Du. I could go Replacements. We go Prince, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. We could go Semisonic.
You got Mint Condition.
You got Mint Condition. So we don't even live there and we're rattling these off. And that's, you know, that's not LA. That's not New York, right? There's something about, what is it about Milwaukee's system that that really inhibits these acts to break out or feel supported, or they got to leave to do that. And so, Kenita, what do you think the key factors are? And again, this is based on not just your own experiences in the industry, but also as you've been working here at Imagine, you've been interviewing artists through your support for Artist Work Group, right? You've been interviewing artists and venues and trying to understand this better. What are some of the key factors you think are preventing Milwaukee acts breaking big?
Before I answer that, can I give you my vision for an intro? I mean, yes. It's your show. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So for the intro where D-Wade and everybody else was, I think John Ridley has to produce it, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Right?
We're talking about, that's right. So when you're saying intro, you're saying the video that kind of, yes, John Ridley produces it.
I think
yes.
John Ridley has to produce it. I think you get Ian on there, right? King of Millennials. He has to be on there, right?
Ian Hapston. Okay.
Yep. Ian Hapston. But I think the voiceovers is Dasha Kelly and Kwabena Nixon.
Okay.
I think it's them just to bring in that spoken word background, and also the fact that these are two of our Milwaukee-based artists who have been able to go nationally with spoken word.
Got it.
And so I think you include them, and they kind of feel that piece of common. Okay, all right. So what's lacking?
It's just, what are key factors that are inhibiting? So it doesn't mean that we're lacking something. It could be maybe things are preventing or
but
things
I think
are
it's,
blocking.
I think it's... I'm going to say lack of infrastructure.
Okay.
There really is no blueprint. And I would say there's no, so there's a few things. I think much like the segregation that's very real in Milwaukee, that segregation extends past ethnicity. Mm-hmm. It also permeates industries, like mm-hmm. our creative industry. Mm-hmm. And then it permeates genre. Mm-hmm. There are just some genres that don't have their basic needs met to be mm-hmm. able to perform and gig out consistently. And I don't know that we have a culture in Milwaukee yet that truly supports and completely values Milwaukee-based talent in the way that we see it in other cities.
Okay.
And I think that's systemic. I think that's from, you know, the consumer to the bookers in any given industry. So whether we're looking at photographers or videographers, musicians. And you know, what I love about New Orleans, right? Specifically, so I grew up during a time of Cash Money Millionaires. So back when Lil Wayne didn't look super weird, right? I mean, cause he looks weird now, right? He's done a lot.
No comment.
But them and Cash Money, not Cash Money, No Limit Records. And so this idea that they were able, that there was an infrastructure set from DJs to consumers to clubs to record stores, that they had all of these pieces together that helped them build something where if we never here in Milwaukee ever bought an album, it would be fine because they had a system where they were able to make money. I've seen the same thing in Atlanta when you think about all of the record labels, especially the black labels that came out of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And even now, I mean, you from Cali, right? So like Too Short, you know what I'm saying? Like selling stuff out of the trunk of his car, like Nipsey Hussle selling CDs out of the trunk of his car. If somebody tries to give me a CD at Walmart, I'm like, go away. I'm just mm-hmm. here for toothpaste. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
That have more Why to say you... about you or about them?
Well, I said from consumer to the top. So, yes, when I'm going out in my satin bonnet just getting toothpaste from Walmart that I don't want to go to anyways, I do not want your CD that has Sharpie on it. Like, no, mm-hmm. I don't.
Right.
Skedaddle.
Right. And there's a lot more people that feel your way.
Yeah. And, you know, but it's interesting. In one of the conversations that I had with an artist through my capacity here at Imagine MKE, he mentioned, look, I'm at the table with all of these people who could help me, but this is not the opportunity to ask them for help. Mm. And so I need more opportunities where I can be in the room with these people and they know that that's why they're in the room. And so that just kind of brings me back to the Walmart example. Like, bro, this is not the time to sell me a CD. You know what I'm saying? Like, I look a hot mess. Let me give you my number and let's talk about it later. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think, again, there's so many, there's not an infrastructure. And I don't know that we yet have a way to support our artists where they don't need to go elsewhere.
Right.
And so what does it look like as a city of Milwaukee when we have that?
So one of the things that we talk about in the office quite a bit is this idea of how do we create the creative culture of a city, right? How do we create the culture of Milwaukee such that it feels like artists are supported, that it feels like folks who are going to Walmart feel okay about buying a CD from a rapper or whatever, right? Like how do we generate that sense of a culturally creative city? Because my guess is that the reason why Minneapolis has been able to generate an incredible volume of creative capital is because of that culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so you had alluded to it a little earlier, Mac, that you'd lived there for a while. Can you talk a little bit about what that felt like for the 5 years you were there?
Yeah, I lived there for about 5-6 years, and I was actually involved in improv there because I came up, that's my background, Chicago improv, and so I actually did some improv in Minneapolis and saw literally a theater get built. Right, an improv house called Huge Theater, which is probably a palace now. Great work that's being done there. But I got to see that being built, and the way I saw it being built was because I got to see all the different ensembles and underground work, if you will, to build the infrastructure to make that happen. And I think what's really interesting is that I think in Minnesota, at least from my experience there, or at least Minneapolis and St. Paul, there is a culture of like, we're going to do this. Like, this is the right thing to do. There's a common senseness about education matters and that we should all be, you know, we should do the right thing. Now, granted, let's be real. If you looked at racial outcomes, those are lagging. So it's not a utopia for all people. But in terms of the arts, they've been consistently funding it publicly and privately. So that's there. And there's a lot of different venues to do these things. And also, I wonder, it's home of the University of Minnesota, which is one of the, a large land grant college. And again, a lot of these places, Madison is the home of University of Wisconsin, but imagine if you had University of Wisconsin-Madison in your city. Now, again, this is no shade of UWM, but we're talking about it's a different vibe, right? It's so, you know, we know college towns are great hotbeds for talent. It's something interesting about Minneapolis-St. Paul to have that. It's also two cities. At the end of the day, it's also two cities, right? Like, you have Minneapolis and St. Paul. You have the state capital there. There's a lot of things that I think allow it to have things to thrive. But as I also want to double back, as you were talking, Kenita, I was thinking about, again, my time in Chicago improv in the 90s. I was thinking about, you were like mapping out this infrastructure. And I think about how improv broke huge in the 90s and 2000, you know, to 2000s. And I keep saying, I think improv in the comedy industry was one of the innovations of the last 20 years, right? And to the point that you look at any, like Judd Apatow, you look at Larry David, you look at people are willing to watch improv as a product now. And that wasn't, you know, 20 years ago, we're on the top of a bar doing bits. Didn't imagine that. I think what was interesting at that time, you had hundreds of people willing to pay to take classes, even though, quote unquote, making a living of it was a dream. You know, the notion like, I'm going to be on Saturday Night Live someday. That's like saying I'm going to be in the NBA. It wasn't even like a thought. for a few people, it was a thought, and then they would get it. And then what it did is it created this path of like, well, I could be on SNL, or other people went to LA for pilot season. I could do that. And then you had this like interesting notion of like, I could do industry out there, but I can still do it in Chicago and do it well. And there's enough people coming through in this critical mass of literally thousands of people. Here's the other thing it needed. It needed the privilege of people willing to pay for classes and having that, which is why I think a lot for many years, improv was very white, college educated, you know, it's a certain, now it's becoming more diverse and inclusive. So I think these are things that play into an infrastructure, right? The notion of who gets to have access, mm-hmm. who gets to be supported. I think at least in Chicago with the improv story, there was enough of a critical mass of people willing to do shows and bars, like spaces that weren't traditional spaces. And then ultimately, you again, also alongside places like Second City, which were venerable, it's been around for, you know, decades and known as a venue, right? Like, again, it was a rich ecosystem of do-it-yourself along with mid-tier and, again, established places. And then ultimately, a sense of you can make money off it and do it. And then ultimately, you also had five or six colleges in the area. That's a talent pipeline of kids in college doing improv, stuff like that. So for music, I don't see that same level of an ecosystem. It's not obvious to me, but again, I'm outside of it. So that's what I was thinking about when you were telling your story. What would it take to have that?
So many things. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking was the money thing is real, yeah. You know? But I also think quality and consistency. And so something, so I was managing a group. My first group was a skateboard hip hop group called The Cranberry Show. And they would perform, at that time, it was called Stoneflies, now Company Brewing. And they performed there every weekend with this group called House of M, which is like Milwaukee's Wu-Tang. It was like a bunch of dudes. Like mm-hmm. And so I was like, yo, we got to stop playing Stonefly, even if we don't have a show. We got to stop because we can't continue to do the same show every weekend for $7 and expect people to continue to pay. And we want to be mindful of who we're performing with, right? So if we're going to ask people to pay $7, $10 to come see us, we really got to give them a great show if we're asking them to spend their Friday or Saturday night with us. So we didn't perform for like 2-3 months. We performed everywhere around Stonefly. And some weekends we didn't have a show at all. And they were upset and they would call me and, you know, be annoyed or whatever. But when we finally went back, we did the Super Califragilisticexpialidocious show. And we sold out. Still 10 years later, that's one of the shows that I still see people talking about online about how great of a show that was. But with that show, we also brought in Northside artists. We brought in Young Deuces and Streets and Young Deuces. We brought in Ill B, who now goes by the name B. Alexander. And so we tried to create this space where we recognized that there were not consistent venues on the North Side where you could go and see artists perform. And so I think there's a few things. One, all of us raising the quality of the music we're doing, but also the shows that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And this is really, this is in all genres, rock shows, hip hop shows, death metal. We have to raise the quality of what we're doing. We have to get to a place where we are saying, no, we're not just good enough for Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. We're good. Like, mm-hmm. we're just good artists. Mm-hmm. And you should be paying $15 to come see us, right? But then consistency in venues. That's a little harder when you think about the urban genres because there's turnover with those venues. And so
They close, they open, right?
Yeah. And so, like, if there's somewhere I want to go every Friday night, did y'all used to watch New York Undercover?
Yep.
Okay, right. So y'all remember Natalie's?
Malik Yoba.
Yes, right. Y'all remember Natalie's? Like, at the end, they would bring on a major artist and they would do a cover of a song, which I just wonder how that worked with licensing. But anyways, where is my Natalie's? I don't have a Natalie's that I can go to every weekend and be assured that I'm going to have a great music experience. Mm-hmm. Mm.
It sounds like there's like a lot of different pipeline issues, right? There's like the talent pipeline issue. There's the demand pipeline issue. There's like all of these kinds of infrastructural questions that really are at the core of I think what we're trying to do here, right? Which is address the, at least with what Kenita's doing, address the issue that like artists of all disciplines need some infrastructural like support, training, capacity building so that they can even begin to fill that pipeline with great quality work at a consistent volume, right? Mm-hmm. I think the buyer pipeline, the demand side is also a really interesting one too, right? How do we train? And we've been talking a little bit about it with Gallery Night. How do we train the folks going to Gallery Night so that they know or are in a posture to buy, right? I think similarly in Chicago, it didn't happen overnight that people would just say, hey, I'm going to go pay 15, 20 bucks to go see an improv show, right? So like there had to be like some kind of like a thing, right? That sort of, or maybe not a thing, but sort of some sort of onboarding into making it seem like this is a thing that you want to do. It's in high demand, and that you're going to be entertained, or you're going to have some sort of experience, some communal experience.
Let me share just a really quick story about the Chicago, because when I lived through it, you know, I took classes at IO 1997. There was only shows on Saturday and Sunday night, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock show. All right. Within 4 years, there's a Wednesday night show, Thursday night show, Friday night show, Saturday, right? And we used to joke, you used to know like, oh, if you're Wednesday night, you're probably not there yet. But then if you're closing Friday night, Saturday night, there was a hierarchy that was built, right? And what I witnessed during that time from 1997 to 2003 was that folks like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey got famous and kept talking about IO. And there was this vibe of like, oh, you want to see the next Tina Fey, you got to go to IO.
There's that halo.
You got to go. Yeah. And so there are enough people to go like, oh, for 10 bucks, I'll, you know, again, it wasn't like the product was always awesome. If there was three acts that night, three ensembles, you probably knew the third one was going to be solid, but there's enough people to go like, oh, I want to see the first two because maybe there's something there. And like, what does it take to train the audience to be okay with that? Just like, I'm going to go catch this show. I don't know all the acts, but maybe I might catch something there. Like, and I don't know if that's necessarily critical mass. I will say the audiences, that room had 150 people, you know? And so it was a pretty packed house. It was a full house. And so to me, that was that interesting audience training or, you know, what validation and something, how does that happen for Milwaukee music, or how does that happen for, again, Milwaukee fill in the blank discipline?
There's a sense of real pride too.
That's right.
Like I remember coming up in, we're about the same age. So when I graduated from college, there were a few places that I knew I could move to if I wanted to make it as an actor, filmmaker, or a playwright or a theater director. It was either New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. And the thing I knew about Chicago was that they had a lot of pride in the theater scene.
That's right.
And I wonder like, what are the things for us that we have that kind of pride in, right? Like I think as we think about like, you know, with this DNC coming to town, I think we're trying to figure out how to shape that narrative of the story we're trying to tell about our city that's arts and culture focused, that we have, that we can inspire that sense of pride in our sector. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that leading up to it, right? I think the pride we have is in our beer and cheese, right? Mm-hmm. Is in all of the stuff that all of the stories that have been told about us.
Right.
And so I wonder how do we begin to shift that story, at least for us, that our point of pride ought to be our incredible arts and culture sector?
Well, I think there's a couple things, right? When you say beer and cheese as like a part of our city's identity, that's really only some of our city's identity, right? Depending on if you're on the south side of Milwaukee, you know, if you're outside of Bayview and downtown and Third Ward, that's not your identity. And you don't even really think about your identity. As you were talking, is there something on my face?
No,
I need to get closer to the mic. My bad. Okay. Sorry, I didn't know what that cue meant. You guys need to sign here. All right. So I think that to me, like, as you were talking, what I visualized in my head is like, what if there was a video that told the story of each of our parts of our city? Mm. Like, what if that's what makes Milwaukee cool? That when you go into a different part of the city, you get a different flavor and a different identity and a different pride. Growing up on the north side of Milwaukee, I can tell you our pride was in Cuckoo Cow. And him doing a video on 33rd and North and showing that there's a laundromat over there. And I think there's a pride in that. What is the pride of the South Side? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Is it the boutiques that make the quinceañera dresses? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what makes Milwaukee beautiful. Mm-hmm. That depending on where you at, like, there's a different identity. There's something else I wanted to mention, too, when you talked about the comedy shows in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the psychographics of what makes a person, right? Because there's some values. So we often we talk about demographics, but I'm curious about psychographics. So what are the values that would make a person say, this $10 is worth it to go to this comedy show?
Right, right. I'm willing to spend it.
Right.
Not my money, my time.
Right. But yeah. So like what values have to be present or does a person have to be living in order for you to be interested in Milwaukee-based talent and really helping to harness that?
What a great conversation. That's my hard. That's my hard stop.
That was awkward.
Awkward AF.
Awkward.
But I guess that moving forward, right? The work is. We raised some really good questions, and the work of Imagine is trying to, through its support for artists, as well as its marketing and PR work, as well as public policy work and neighborhood partnerships.
That's right.
Right, to draw all those together to kind of speak to what you're talking about, Canitas. How do we create a better ecosystem? And today's conversation was trying to lift up some of the things we're digging through right now.
That's right. But we have one more piece of the show for you, and that's our celebration of joyful abundance. So this is G-C-B. What you got for us, K-Town?
You know, 20 years ago when I wrote my first article, I never imagined that there would be a Chamber of Commerce for arts and culture in Milwaukee. So I think the joyful abundance for me is like, no, Milwaukee doesn't have an infrastructure yet, but now is the time where we can create it. We have no studios. Mm-hmm. We never thought that we would have something like this. Mm-hmm. We have Imagine MKE now. We have all of these people, at least here at Imagine MKE and through our work groups and the people that we touch, who are super committed to this vision of Milwaukee. So this is an exciting time to be doing the work that we're doing and to be asking these questions. So I'm really excited about that.
And also, the beautiful thing about our work is anybody's welcome to come in, as long as you're willing to do the work.
Everyone's welcome.
And in March, we've got our next round of work groups. Yep. So check out the links here at the website, imaginemke.org, and you're welcome to come.
You going to read us out or what?
I think I'm going to read us out. By the way, tell your friends about us. Read us out. Like, subscribe, hype it up, right? We want to make sure more people can touch us and experience Imagine MKE's work around making a more vibrant city through the arts and culture. That being said, Canita, thanks for coming on today.
This has been so great.
Thanks for having me as your first guest. No one can take that from me.
No one. You're now the answer to a trivia question.
Except us.
Yeah, it depends how we release it. We might release these in different orders. Hey, you guys, stay tuned. We'll come back next time.
Peace out. Bye.
Bye.